Hi, and welcome back to Lessons Learned on Radio Lore. I'm Amelia Joyce. And today we're going to be talking about a kind of intense topic, and it's something I've had to deal with, and it can be triggering for some people, so I just want to say that now, like, this is a very tricky subject to talk about, and I'm going to do my best to do it, especially because, like, I've been a lot involved in a lot of, like, different institutions, buildings, you know, all that stuff, and I'm going to do my best to, like, explain it all. There's going to be things that I realize I'm going to even have to skim over and talk about in different episodes, because I just have to, like, be like, yes, this happened, but this is not, like, I'm talking about becoming homeless today and how I became homeless. And I was not only homeless, but I was homeless with my child. We were homeless for 3 years. We were mostly living in transitional shelters, and it's kind of hard to explain if you don't know. But there's different sectors in the shelter system, and we mainly stayed at transitional, and then at the end we stayed in the emergency sector. But yeah, so mostly the duration we stayed at transitional, which transitional just means that you can stay up to a year usually, and then some, depending on if you're really young. I wasn't that young, so I couldn't, but for some of them, you can stay up to, like, 2 years if it's, like, kind of, like, a transitional apartment-style thing. But anyways, for me, I could stay up to a year at a time with my child, and that's why it was, like, considered transitional. And then you still had to do, like, SPDAT, which SPDAT is kind of, like, it's just kind of, like, a test you take to see, like, your priority status for, and just, like, a whole bunch of questions about your homelessness, basically, and you have, like, a score. It's kind of hard to explain if you've never been in the shelter system, but you still take that, but you're not considered, like, in crisis mode. Like, you're not in, like, a domestic violence shelter or anything. You're not in an emergency shelter. Like I said, at the end, though, we did have to stay in the emergency sector because the transitional sector we were getting, like, too old, and then, like, we just couldn't find a place, and then we had to stay into the emergency sector. But before all of that, I want to explain, like, how I became homeless, like, and I want to really get into, like, it can really happen to anyone, and it really did suck that it happened to me with my baby, you know? That's probably the worst part. But we're here now, you know, that's basically what I have to, like, do is, like, just feel grateful for getting to a place of stability, right? To even, like, not feel like complete garbage for being in that situation, because I did feel that way a lot of the time. But yeah, so how I became homeless, I want to start, like, with me, I guess, like, getting pregnant, just to kind of, like, go over that quickly. I got pregnant. I was actually a virgin. This is going to sound like it's not real, but it is real. I didn't have sex in high school. I was a virgin until I was 21, and I had a baby at 22. So, like, about, like, 6 months into me, like, being sexually active, I got pregnant with my, like, significant other at the time. And, yeah, and I was working as a quality control personnel at a car wash. So I basically was detailing cars and, like, customer service. And I did that for, like, a few years. But, yeah, I found out at the car wash that I was pregnant, and I still did the car wash job while pregnant until I was 8 months pregnant. And when I did become pregnant, I moved back in. I asked my mom if I, because I was living on my own at that point when I was working at the car wash, and I asked, like, and there's, it's because I, you know, moved on my parents the first time for toxicity reasons. And then when I was pregnant, I moved back in. I asked my mom if I could move back in because I was pregnant. And that was not the best experience moving back in. I definitely probably shouldn't have done that. It didn't last very long. I had my baby there at my mom's house. My mom and my dad's house. And when Lily, my baby, was 3 weeks old, my mom and my boyfriend at the time ended up getting into a fight because my boyfriend had stolen money from her. And my baby's only 3 weeks old. And my mom, in like spit of anger, told me to get out. And I was like, the whole experience of living with her was just not like good anyway, and I was already looking for a way out, and she just looked at me and told me to get out, and I was just like, okay. And I looked at my baby and I was like, good, like, I get to leave. So I called a family member and I told her what happened, and she said that we could stay there until we found a place. And like right off the bat, my family member, you know, contacted my mom, and my mom comes back in like a little while after, and she's like, and it's just like very typical behavior for my mother, to like kind of flip the switch. And she was like, said something along the lines of, okay, like, let's calm down, like, you don't have to leave, like, we can talk about this tomorrow, like. And I was just like baffled when she was saying this to me. I was just like, no, like, I need, like, I'm not gonna have this keep happening to me and my kid, and like worry about me and my kid being like kicked out by my own mom. Like, you know, I'd rather not have that risk, and like I'd rather be like on my own, like accord of like where, you know, or if I'm anyways, I just was like, I know I'm not gonna like take it anymore, because I was 22 at that point, right? And I had already moved out and had to move back in, and I was 22, and I looked at her and I looked at my baby, and I was just like, I'm not gonna have her like be done the same thing to her, and just like the instability of it all. So we went to my family members for like 6 weeks. We did find a place in Kitchener, and we lived there. I mean me and my baby and her father. And this is something I do have to just kind of like glaze over in this episode, because it's really not what this episode is about. But her father and I did not like have like a good relationship, a stable one at all. There was a lot of like domestic violence, and by that I say there was no physical violence, but there was everything else you could imagine besides physical violence. It was like emotional and financial abuse mostly. When she was 8 months old, I finally had enough, especially because he was not helping with, like I said, financially. He was really abusing me financially and abusing me emotionally and belittling me and telling me that I wasn't working hard enough on, like, you know, cooking, cleaning, and taking care of our child alone. And then he would be, you know, on and off with jobs, like temp jobs kind of thing, and sometimes bring in money, but then use that money for not rent or bills. So yeah, when she was 8 months old, I finally had enough, and he was also not being faithful to me, which is just like a cherry, like underneath it all. Like, it's just like, oh, like another thing on the list that's just going wrong. You know what I mean? So I just had enough, and yeah, I kicked him out / he left. Like, it was just kind of like we were done. And he ended up taking my microwave off of the counter, which his parents gave to us, and the Keurig they gave to us also. And I had an 8-month-old baby, like, sitting in the high chair. Like, we were all there while this was happening. Like, there's nothing really I could do, because his thing was that it's his parents, and his parents weren't getting involved in the situation because they were, like, they wanted to stay out of it, which is completely understandable. But yeah, he had to move into like a rent a room kind of thing. So yeah, he just took the microwave, and I ended up having to like cook baby food all on like the stove. Like, everything just had to be done on the oven. So, which is fine. Like, it's like whatever. It's just like kind of like interesting that he would do that. But and I, after that, I did have a best friend live with me as like a roommate, and we were living together for a while. Eventually it just like started to like add up, like all the like bills that like we had piled up from before when Zach was living with us. That's his name. I don't really care about saying his name. Hi. Yeah, eventually I was just like, cause I would get baby bonus and I would buy her diapers and buy her wipes and buy all her baby food. Right. And I was living off of like tap water, and I was like, near the end, like severely like malnourished for sure. And like, as soon as that like started happening, like I was living off tap water, that's when I started contacting homeless shelters. And at first, like, I contacted like domestic violence shelters, but like, because my partner was already gone, I wasn't fleeing a situation, but like, I was fleeing the situation that they put me in. But that, it just like, there was no like, you need to have like a police report and all this stuff. And because there was like no physical abuse, it was just like I didn't meet their mandate for living in domestic violence shelter. I eventually found a place that like met the mandate, and I filled out like a self-referral form and ended up booking like an intake the next week where I would like talk to them about my situation. So basically I left, and packed up like as much as they would let me bring. Just like, you know, like they gave me a list of things that I could like, you know, like, cause I couldn't bring too much, cause then we had like a room that we share. Right. And I just left, the apartment. I ended up having to just like, you know, give my 60 days because I like couldn't afford it. And yeah, so I just packed up my things as much as I could. I had to abandon a lot of things, but I packed up like, you know, what I could, and I left there, and I moved in to the like first transitional shelter, which is the main one that I did stay at throughout my period of like being homeless. That was the main one I did stay at. And for the first time I lived there for 11 months, because you can stay up there to a year. That's their mandate. And they also have like age mandate. I think the age limit is 2, and then with like they kind of have like various ages for like women, but they don't like, they usually don't want you to be like too old, but they don't really care. But for kids, they want, like, they don't, they have, like, an insurance, like, they can only do, like, the capacity of age two. But they ended up later, a spoiler, they ended up not meeting that mandate for me and giving me an exception later on in my homelessness because, so yeah, I stayed there for 11 months the first time, and then I went into another transitional shelter in Cambridge where it was like an apartment style, but it was still a homeless shelter. And I stayed there for 9 months because you can stay up to a year. I got evicted from there and I ended up having going back to the first place. Meanwhile, me and Lil are together the whole time. And I'm going to school. I'm going to school at St. Louis. And I was working at a thrift store. And all the meanwhile, like, I'm homeless with my child, you know, with my baby. And, yeah, the second time we went there, we ended up staying for a long time because we were there during COVID. So when we went there, she was two, just about to turn three. We started this homeless journey when she was about 14 months old, okay? And then, so yeah, like I said, 11 months at the first one, 9 months at the second one, and then again, I went to back to the original one and stayed there. We ended up staying there for 16 months because, right when I was about to hit my year, COVID happened and they had to let us stay because you couldn't, evict people at the state of emergency when it first like happened, right? So they had to let us stay up until that time, and we were like scouring through market rent the whole time. And by meanwhile, I was on the housing list, but I ended up not being on the housing list until I got back to the shelter, the original shelter the second time, because the first time I was at the shelter and then the second shelter, they never made sure I was on the community housing list. But then when I went there, the original shelter the second time, then they made sure I was in the community housing list. And that's when I was on the wait list for community housing, was my third like shelter visit, like transitional, whatever. Then I was on it, which was 2019. Like, I think it was July or August 2019. That's when I started when I originally started being homeless at like 2017, which is like brutal. That I wasn't on the home, like, community housing list the whole time, which is just kind of like a lack of services kind of thing, which is like, okay. But then, the case manager, which was a new case manager, made sure I was on the community housing list, you know, when I went there the second time with my child. Like, they had already seen me once, right? Like, with my baby, and now they're seeing me a second time. They're like, all right, let's make sure you're, like, let's contact community housing and make sure you're on the list. And it didn't go through the first time, and then we filled it out again, and we made sure it went through. And I'm thankful for that. Still don't have community housing, by the way. I'm on market rent, but I'm thankful that I'm on it still. But yeah, we stayed there for 16 months the second time, so almost like 3 years, right? And then we were scouring for market rent the whole time, and I wasn't the ideal candidate. I was like a single mom student. And in my price range, they want like a single male or like a couple, right? People would literally tell me they wouldn't want a child living there because of like stairs. I'm like, she's had stairs her entire life. Like, what do you mean? I don't understand. They would just give me an excuse, right? Or they just wouldn't tell. They would just didn't want me living there. That I wasn't like, I didn't have like a good credit score, what have you. So we ended up having to stay in emergency sector for 2 months. So yeah, 3 years of homelessness. The emergency sector part, which was this summer from August 1st to October 1st, which October 1st of 2020 is when we got this place we have now. So we've only not been homeless since October, me and my daughter. And when we were homeless, like during like the emergency, was so rough. We were staying at a motel. So how it works, we were staying through an emergency shelter, but because the emergency shelter on site was a women and families shelter. That's what it like was classified as. And because the on-site was so unsafe with, like, drugs and, you know, just, like, not stable people living there, they would have families stay in a motel room because then, you know, you would have, like, a lock and key kind of thing. And I'm gonna do a whole different episode on the motel and, like, all the different experiences I had there because it's just, like, so, like, I saw a lot while I was there, and my daughter also started school for the first time while we were living there. Like, she started JK for the first time while we were living in a motel. And we would have to, like, I also tried to do school while this is all happening, and she was starting school, and then we had to do a program to, like, scour market rent even further than we already have. And, like, try and find something as, like, fast as possible, right? We ended up finding something in 2 months' time. And that's, like I said, that's how we landed the place we have now. And each different shelter that I've lived at, whether it was the motel or it was the transitional shelters, it was definitely, like, not the best time at a lot of points, but I definitely learned a lot about, like, I don't know, like, life, people, and, like, myself, and just, like, society in general, and, like, services, like, there's a lot I didn't know, and it was weird seeing, and it's so weird, because, like, in high school, I wanted to be a social worker. Which is, like, honestly laughable to me now. Like, no offense to anyone who wants to be a social worker, but, like, seeing it from, like, that perspective, it's just, like, I can never do it. Especially because when I was living there, I would have, like, deep conversations with some of these social workers. And they would tell me, like, all the trauma they go through and, like, not being able to, like, be heard or having to, like, you know, follow, like, the guideline and, like, some things not being right. And social worker, it sucks because it's all based on, like, perspective and, like, people's opinion, really. Like, a social worker's opinion on, like, children and life, and, you know, it's all, and it, I've seen so many women go through different types of, like, situations with social workers, because it all depends on which social worker that you receive, like, help from, depending on the service or whatever. And I've seen some people get, like, completely, like, ignored with their feelings and thoughts, and or just, like, belittled, and, you know, just, and I have done that. That's happened to me. It's happened to me. I've been, like, you know, completely, like, degraded by a lot of social workers before. And it's just because, like, you know, people have bad days and stuff. And, like I said, it's also based on opinion and, like, different types of people and, like, what their perception is and their background and the way their upbringing was, you know, they have a different look on life. And a lot of people out there whether they're a social worker or not, will judge you. But, like, being in a social environment like that where you're literally living there with your child, you feel like you're under a microscope. And it was intense, especially doing it for, like, a long period of time. And them logging everything that you're doing. They have to log everything that you're doing for, like, insurance purposes, like, also, like, lawful purposes. Just they have to know what the log is at that, like, for each resident and what they did that day. So they would have to log that me and my child ate breakfast, like, no joke. Just everything that we did that day, they have to log. And we had programs and we had chores and responsibilities. And if we didn't meet those responsibilities, you would get kicked out. And I'm really thankful for the main shelter that I did live because the main shelter that we did live at, because they really knew the core to who we were. Like, me and my daughter Lily, like, they knew what kind of people we were and what kind of person I am. They really, really got to, like, know the kind of, like, character I have. And then I never want anyone, like, to have, like, a bad day. I'm never, like, wishing ill intent on anyone. I always, like, am spreading, like, good vibes. I never want people to be fighting. And they appreciated that I had, like, that mindset, because there's a lot of women at the shelter who don't have that mindset, and I would try to spread those vibes around, because, like, I don't want people fighting, especially around my child, you know what I mean? So I learned a lot, though, because there was a lot I didn't know. And even just, like, about people and, like, life in general. And I also learned that, like, I can do anything, like, if I set my mind to it, and I don't have to surround myself with any toxicity that I don't want to. I don't have to surround myself with any toxic people that I don't feel comfortable around, having to rely on toxic people to get by. Like, that's the thing. Like, I learned that, like, whether that be family members, like my parents, or like Lily's dad, which, like, I didn't really rely on him too much because he was mainly relying on me, but, like, you get the picture. Even just, like, other family members, like, you know, besides my parents. I don't really, like, I learned that you don't have to, even if they're, blood. And you shouldn't have to. You shouldn't have to deal with, like, abuse or, like, negative energy or people putting you down or belittling you or judging you for every move you make. Or just, like, helicoptering you, you know, like, you shouldn't have to deal with any of that abuse, to receive, like, support and care from people that you considered family, you know? I don't think my daughter should have to still deal with that, because I know, as a child, I didn't have the best time, like, as that surrounding, you know, as we have been, like, told so far in my little podcast series here. But yeah, like, as far as, like, the social work world, it's just, like, there's a lot of things that are corrupt, and, like I said, it's really based on who you receive and what services you are receiving, and what their opinion is of you. And I had a lot of, like, even there was a thing called relief staff, And relief staff just means they're not, like, a, like, they don't work there full time, and they usually work on, like, the weekend shifts, okay? And there was always someone on shift, okay? Let's just, there's always one person on shift. Sometimes there was, like, two, maybe three. And then sometimes, if not during COVID, we had, like, students and stuff, and then volunteers sometimes. But usually there's only one person on shift. And even at night, there was, like, a night shift, right? But, yeah, there was a thing called relief staff, and there was, like, a lot of people on relief staff because it was just, like, different social workers who, like... And that's another thing, like, I would never want to be a social worker because, like, I've learned that, like, there's not a lot of, like, full-time jobs in the social work world, like, and you have to kind of, like, work different jobs, especially at the beginning. So that's another thing that's, like, kind of, like, not the best, like, career field, whatever. But aside from all that, it's just, like, I would not be able to sleep at night. That's just kind of, like, a tidbit there. Like, I would not be able to sleep or, like, live with myself, but whatever. yeah, as far as relief staff goes, they're, like, they would only see you, like, once a month, maybe every 2 weeks, you know. And some of them I, like, absolutely adored and, like, had, like, really strong bonds with. And, like, we'd have, like, deep talks, like I said. And there was definitely, a core group of people who they were, like, they really had, like, everyone's best interest at heart. And you, like, knew that, like, they were doing their job for the, like, right reason, if that makes sense. But then there was people who I knew that were only there to get, like, a paycheck. And that, those are the people who would, like, really judge anyone hard and, like, just, like, ask you for every move that you make because they have to log it right and they're not used to, like, being casual about asking what you're doing and just, like, in your face. And there's people, like, yeah, reliefs, and they also have to deal with, like, there's only one person on staff, and they also have to deal with, like, 10 residents and their children. And, yeah, a lot, there's also a lot of drama that can happen within those walls, which is really intense. And, yeah, I just, sometimes I would feel really antagonized by staff, which it's normal to feel in an institution, especially if you've been in an institution for a long time. And like I said, I felt like we were under a microscope, so it makes sense that I, like, felt, and I was literally being, like, I was institutionalized, so I had strict rules to follow and, like, a program to follow and responsibilities and chores, and on top of that, being a mother. And, like, if you didn't meet those responsibilities and programs, you were not allowed to live there, right? Like, and there was a system where it was, like, you get 10 majors and you were, like, evicted. And some women would not last very long with that rule. Like, someone, I've seen women only last a week with that rule, which is, like, wow. That's, like, that's a record, though. Usually people would last, like, a few months, like, averagely. I've lasted multiple times there, apparently, and can last, just because I don't like to break the rules, especially when it comes to my housing for me and my child. Like, I don't mess with that. I'm not gonna mess that up. You know, I'm gonna try my best not to mess it up, you know, and I did. That's why we were never, like, you know, on the side of the road kind of thing, which I'm really thankful we were never on the side of the road, which that would never happen, I hope, to me and her, or anyone. But yeah, I learned that, like, you don't have to, you know, live with anyone, whether that be, like, live with anyone that's toxic anyways, to get by. Like, cause remember I said that I, when I found out I was pregnant, I moved back in with my parents. And I really shouldn't have, because I knew it was going to be the same thing, right? The same thing that it was before, when I was a child, when I was an adolescent, you know, adult. And I knew that going into it, like, and it just sucked that, like, I remember calling my mom when I found out I was pregnant. And I was like, you know, I have something to tell you. You might want to brace yourself. I was like, literally, I was like, I have something to tell you, Mom. I want you to brace yourself before I tell you. And she's like, okay. And then I said, I'm pregnant. And then she's like, okay. And then I asked her, I was like, and I also was wondering something. She's like, okay. And I was like, I was wondering if I could live with you, you know, move back in with you. Because at that point I was living, like, in a bachelor by myself. And she said, yeah, and we'll get through this together. And guess what? We did not get through that together. And I was just berated and emotionally abused like I had been before. And the worst part was I was pregnant and had, like, having a baby also around that. And meanwhile, during my pregnancy, mind you, my dad was in the hospital. Because he had had a stroke a few years earlier, and then he was in the hospital, like, an intense hospital, like, and then he ended up going to, like, a rehabilitation center for, like, you know, stroke and seizures, because after his stroke, he began to have seizures, when he had the stroke, he became not being able to form full sentences, so he can, like, say certain words, and, like, he still has, like, brain capacity, and, like, he's still, like, you know, he knows what's going on, he talks to us, but he has verbal aphasia, so he can't say it, and sometimes he'll have to write it down, and he can say, like, certain words, and then he also, like, walks with a limp. And he doesn't have full function of his right hand. So when I was pregnant, I was also dealing with that and on top of working. And I wasn't really able to go to the hospital or the rehabilitation center. Because when he was in the hospital, there was a point where he was in ICU. And I couldn't go to the ICU when I was pregnant. And it was also really hard to see him like that, especially being, like, an emotional pregnant woman, seeing my dad in ICU and, like, in a rehabilitation for a stroke, you know, it was just, like, really intense, and me, like, having a baby for the first time, and, like, my mom made me feel really, like, a bad person for not seeing him in the hospital all the time, every free moment I had from, you know, my job, when I was pregnant, you know, and it's just, like, she wasn't really thinking about my mental situation or my situation in general, and, yeah, she would just berate me for that, and just berate me for other things, and it was just the same thing, and then she, like I said, she ended up kicking me and my daughter out, so it was just the same thing, and then taking it back 20 minutes later. It's just sort of a roller coaster ride I'm not willing to go on, you know? And I, like I said, I'm not willing to rely on toxic people to get by. I would rather, like, work my butt off like I did for 3 years being homeless with my child to get to where I am now. Like, I'm glad I did that. And I'm glad I took that route instead of living with toxic people and toxicity around me. And toxicity around my child is the main, like, thing. Like, people in my family question and wonder all the time in their brains why I had to cut them off. And for me, it's really just like, it makes sense to me. It's logical. Because I don't want the cycle to keep going on, you know, of my child. Because myself, when I was a child, was around toxicity and also, like, instilled into, like, negative behavior and negative thinking. Like, negative image of myself, you know? Like, I was literally taught to hate myself for who I was and, like, what I looked like. And basically being raised to constantly think about what others think of me. I didn't want her to, like, be around anyone who, like, believes that's actually, like, how you should be raising children. I realized that, and just to get by, no, like, I would rather her be around me, and I know that I create positivity for her as much as I possibly can, and I, you know, make her feel loved and, you know, that she can do anything, and that she's beautiful the way that she is, and I don't want anyone else feeding her anything different, and also, like, making me feel like I should be feeding her something else, or be teaching her something else that they feel is right, when at the end of the day, I'm her mom, you know, and I'm an adult, like, I'm 27 now, right, and I choose how I want her to be, like, raised and what I want her values to hopefully be. I'm not gonna, you know, force anything, but I want her to, you know, kindness and, like, compassion and, like I said, not to judge others, because I was taught, like, literally the opposite, that I should be judging myself and others. And I don't want her around that anymore. And that's why I did what I did. When my mom was, when she walked in, like, 20 minutes later and was like, oh, it's fine, like, let's just talk about it tomorrow, you know, like, we're mad right now, like, but, like, blah, 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 like, no, like, I'm not gonna keep having that toxic behavior. I'm not gonna accept it any longer, you know, like, I've accepted it for a long time, but that was just the moment that I was just like, no, absolutely not, like, I can't keep doing this, especially to my little baby over there, you know, she was only 3 weeks old when this day was happening, and what was more intense is that I ended up going into, like, an even, like, worse situation with her father, because I realized that my child's father and my mother are very similar. And the other day, I didn't know this, but fun facts with Amelia, they're both Virgos. And I didn't know that until, like, a few days ago. And I realized it, and I was like, oh, that makes sense. I'm like, damn, Daniel, like, back at it again with the white Vans. I'm like, oh, man. And I didn't even realize until now, like, how sad is that? But I never want to have to rely on anyone or, like, and I have maybe, and this is a big reason why I have a hard time asking people for help or, like, accepting help or just, like, yeah, especially asking for help. Like, I don't have any desire to do that. I don't like doing it. And I don't like having to rely on anyone but myself. And so it's, like, really hard for me to ask for help. But, like, aside from all that, I don't want to have to rely on anyone that's, like, toxic just to get by, you know, whether that be blood or not. Like, just because you think you can, like, provide something for me, or help me in some way, you know, financially or whatever, I'm not willing to get abused because of that, or get my, like, child possibly abused just because you're providing something. I'd rather do it on my own. You know, maybe it's going to be slower, but it's way more worth it to, like, make that bag myself and get there myself and reach my goals myself without having to deal with abusive behavior that I've dealt with my entire life. And so, yeah, that was the moment I was just like, no, I'm not going to keep doing this cycle. And also, like, have her live in the cycle, my daughter live in the cycle, you know? Like, I wanted something different for her. I wanted a better environment. And even though, you know, the shelter environment wasn't the best, that was only a short period of time. I didn't think it was going to be 3 years. Just so we're clear. I didn't think that was going to happen. But it did happen. And it can really happen to anyone, homelessness. Some people might say, you know, why wouldn't you just go back to the toxic household or another family member that, you know, whatever, another toxic family member? It's like, nah, like, I'm not, like I said, like, they would get fulfillment out of it, but I would feel drained from it, if that makes sense. They would get fulfillment out of, like, somehow helping me, like, financially, what have you. They get off on it, really. They get high off of it. And I'm left to feel, like, berated and, like, abused by them. And, like, also feel like my daughter could eventually feel that way. It just wasn't worth it to me. Money will never be worth it to me to get abused. I've definitely learned that. Like, money will never, ever, ever be worth getting abused for. And I definitely want everyone to know who's listening. It's definitely not worth it. And I did try with her dad because I wanted to say that I did try. But it wasn't worth getting abused for. I'm glad to say, like, I'm glad that I get to say that I tried, and that I, like, tried as best I possibly could, and, like, because that was her dad, right? I wanted to see if there was even, like, a sliver of hope, but I just don't think he was ready to be a dad. Or I don't think he's ready to be a partner either, because he's still very young in the mind. And that's what just it came down to, really, is that he wasn't the one for me. Thanks for the child, though. Like, props to you for the sperm. But, like, that was the light at the end of the tunnel, was Lily, was my baby. Right? Like, everything happens for a reason. For that way, for, like, if I didn't meet him and, like, have his baby, I wouldn't have her. And it probably seems, like, unreal to someone listening that, like, social workers seeing me every day would just, like, let me live with my toddler for 3 years homeless, you know? But I've seen crazier things, and it's because I was the only stable person to take care of her on a daily basis, and the means to, and the bond, like, we've been together that whole time, you know? She's my baby. Like, there was nothing wrong with the situation, like, emotionally, you know? It was just the homelessness. They can't take away your child because you're homeless. That's not a thing. They can take away for other reasons, and I've seen that happen. But as far as homelessness, that's absolutely not a thing. And to think that, like, her homeless mother is the most stable person. Like, that says a lot. That just says a lot of, like, my family dynamic, right? Of stability and, like, what stable looks like, I guess, in, like, when it comes to, like, frame of mind and, like, putting priorities first. I definitely, like, always put her first, and, like, they knew that. Like, they knew that I was always putting her before myself. And she was in my care for a reason, you know? And we had, like, a big emotional attachment. We have a really strong bond because we've been through this whirlwind together, just, like, me and her, you know? Like, there hasn't been, you know, another parent. So, it's very, like, we definitely miss each other even when, like, we're at school. Like, the other day she came home from school because they opened up schools now for elementary school students, and she's in JK. And she was like, I missed you. And it was her first day. She's like, I missed you, but I didn't cry. And I had fun at school. I'm like, good. Because she loves school. She really does. She loves playing with her friends. And, like, she honestly loves learning, which is, like, so cute. And she loves, like dancing with her friends, or, like, just playing outside in the snow with her friends, what have you. But she's, like, funny. She's just, like, because there has been times where she has cried. And she just, like, looks at me. She's like, I missed you, but I didn't cry. I'm like, that's good. I'm glad. But I'm glad you had fun. And she gets really excited to, like, spend time with her friends, but also it gets excited to go home at the end of the day, so it's nice. Balance. And then I get to do my school, right? So I'm really thankful we got here. Definitely the most, like, intense part was at the end, like, when we had to stay at the motel. And, like I said, that's a whole nother story in itself, that whole experience. And she had to start school there for the first time, like, just, like, the atmosphere was very, the most toxic I've ever been in. But we had our own room, so we didn't have to, you know, share a bathroom with any of these people. I had to share a bathroom with a lot of different people in my life, let's just say that, especially in the shelter system, in the transitional shelter system. I've had to share a bathroom a lot. So at the motel, that was nice that me and Lil had our own bathroom. But as far as outside, it was just, like, very toxic. And I kept her as safe as possible. But it was still all around just very intense atmosphere. And I never want to do that again. And we ended up, you know, finding this place, a bachelor, for October 1st. And that's where we live now. And I'm literally thankful for my little love shack, okay? Like, I'm literally thankful for my love shack. I don't care that I'm living in a bachelor with her, because I know it's not going to be forever, and I know that we're safe, and we're warm, and we're, you know, we're fed, and we're stable, whether's before we weren't, you know, whether that being at the shelter, or at family member's house, or at, or, like, living with her father, you know, like, that wasn't stable either. So I know that with just living with me and her, it is stable, because there's no, like, toxic energy, like, being produced around us or to us, or, like, people thinking they can, like, hold things over our heads or judge us or anything like that. There's none of that here. So I'm really thankful we got here and that we get to finally be on our own. Because, like, living with, like, a set of rules to go by for, like, years, you're literally institutionalized to, like, think a certain way and like live a certain way. And it's not fun, like having like kind of like a godly figure over your life, you know, and like have like people get to have like meetings about the Amelia and Lily file, you know. And it's just like literally like living under a tiny, tiny microscope, like where they're just like trying to dissect, or at least how that's felt, trying to dissect your life and like how they can like fix your life almost. And it's kind of like weird. I don't know. It was a weird feeling. It was a weird feeling to go through, especially for years. And like, it was definitely a lot of pressure. A lot of pressure. But I learned a lot about myself. And like I said, that I don't have to rely on anything toxic to get by, you know? I just have to rely on my dreams, my self-worth, what my values are, you know? I rely on, like, my thinking and what my morals are, you know? And I focus on the kind of person I am, my character, you know? Like, I know that I am a good person and that I try and send good vibes to everyone, and, like, I try to be as positive as I can in every situation and to spread that message everywhere. Like, I try to spread that message everywhere because I don't want anyone feeling like they aren't, like, good enough or that they aren't worthy of anything, you know? Like, I never want someone to feel that way, because I felt that way for a long time. Worthy of, like, just, like, tender, loving care, which, like, I feel like tender, loving care is, just, like, I feel like that's, like, a basic necessity, especially for children, but, like, I feel like for anyone, you should have some tender, loving care in your life for your own, like, mental state. I'm just really thankful for everything, even being homeless. Like, as weird as that sounds, it taught me a lot about life and, like, society and people, because I've had to deal with a lot of personalities in the shelter system and having to, like, walk on eggshells for a lot of the time and kind of, like, you know, prepare for anything, kind of like on your toes kind of thing. And, like, meanwhile, you have to raise a child during that whole thing and make sure she's safe and fed, you know, clean, all of those things, and emotionally well also. You want to make sure she's doing emotionally well, she's not tainted or anything, and that she's getting enough play time. Just a whole list of things that I have to remember. And no one is having to help me with any of this, you know? And meanwhile, I have to follow a set of rules and go to programs and do chores every day, and which, like, you have to do chores every day at your own place, but, like, it was kind of like a set time, set stone, set activity kind of thing. And it was just like, yeah, it was a lot of pressure, but it taught me, like, a lot, and it taught me how to be on my own without having to rely on anyone but myself and my own, like, mindset. Because it's all about mindset, right? Like, it's, I feel like life is what you make it, so let's make it rock, as Hannah Montana once said. And I feel like it's mostly mindset. Like, if you have the mindset that you're gonna fail, you are going to fail. And I'm trying to put the mindset out there that, like, I can do anything. And that I can achieve any dream or goal that I want. And it's all about mindset and what I do to pursue those goals. Like, what things I do to produce the dreams that I want. And life is what you make it. And it might take a while to get there. And, like, sometimes it seems hopeless at points. Because there was points where it was not all sunshine and rainbows. I had ups and downs when it came to emotions, for sure. And I still do. But at the end of the day, it's all about what you want to happen. What you seek out. What energy you produce, whether that's good or bad. And if you're producing energy that you want something to happen, it will happen. And it's about the mindset of, like, you can do anything as long as you set your mind to it and you want it to happen and you're doing it for yourself. And I'm doing it for myself and my child, and I want us to have, like, a better life and a better emotional state than I had as a child, especially for her. Like, she deserves to have a good childhood and a childhood filled with tender loving care, you know? I really, really am thankful that we're here and that she can have that now without having to be around toxicity or toxic people, whether that's blood or not. And I'm glad I get to raise her and I get to wake up every single day and just see that beautiful face and that beautiful smile, you know. I'm glad I'm the one who gets to be her mom. And that's all, like, we wouldn't be here without, like, everything that happened. So I'm gonna cut this now because we're past an hour. But I really want to thank you for listening. I know this is a very intense topic. I did make a Spotify playlist for this episode. It will be linked with this episode. This is episode number 3, Becoming Homeless. And it just has a list of songs that I helped me through homelessness. And just got me through it, you know, kind of got me through the day, kind of got me through the days, you know. It kept me hopeful, I guess, is what the list of songs for this week is. If you have any questions about anything that I talked about, I have Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. You can follow me on there and you can message me if you have any questions. And I'm an open book about a lot of things because I want everyone to, like, learn something from me, if anything. But yeah, Instagram is Emelia Joyce, which is EmeliaJoyce. And then Twitter and TikTok is Emelia Joyce's, or Emelia Joyce with an S at the end. You can message me on any of those because I'm the most active on those. And if you have any questions about anything I discuss, I'll be happy to answer them if you're confused about anything. Yeah, the main thing I learned was that anyone can do anything as long as they set their mind to it, and that you can get out of toxic situations and that you don't have to live in them, and that life does get better. All right, this is Lessons Learned. This is Emelia Joyce signing off Radio Laurier. Have a good rest of your week, guys. Bye.